Coming up next on Tech News Today, Twitter has improved its anti-harassment arsenal a little bit more. Also, YouTube opens up its mobile live streaming to even more creators. The dark web has encountered a vigilante hacker. All the good and the bad of switching between mobile OSs, and neural networks are now enhancing pixelated images. Isn't that nice? All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by Cashfly at cachefly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1700. Nice round number. Recorded Tuesday, February 7th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT.
And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
Welcome to Tech News Today, episode 1700. Whoa. Feels like just yesterday was episode 1699, doesn't it?
It really does. God, it's crazy how time changes like that.
Mm-hmm.
Time passes quickly.
I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Today, an iOS user. Tomorrow, an Android user again. How do you feel about switching from, how do you feel about your upcoming switch from Android to iOS? Are you a little intimidated, a little scared?
I am a little scared. What if I forgot how to use the iPhone?
I think it'll take you back. I think it'll all come rushing back.
Mm-hmm. You know, I read today that it takes 66 days to really break a habit and get into a new one.
Oh.
So maybe next year we'll do two months.
2 months. Then the next year we'll do 4 months. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, the paths will just converge and swap entirely, and that'll just be our new platforms.
Yep.
And, yeah, things will change a lot.
All right, shall we get to the tech
news? Yeah, let's do some news before we talk about that switch stuff.
Twitter just finally got serious about abuse and harassment. In a blog post, the company says soon they will filter out abusive tweets before you see them. Twitter hopes that with three new tools, they'll still be able to foster free speech while at the same time slowing trolls from opening new accounts, tweaking search to limit hate speech, and collapsing potentially offensive or what they call low-quality tweets. I guess I am hoping that this will work. They said in their blog post they want to make enough changes that people will feel the impact.
Recognize that they aren't seeing as much stuff in their feed. So this isn't necessarily getting rid of the content necessarily. This is really just hiding it for the most part, which is what they've been doing. This is kind of a further continuation. What it reminded me of, for any Reddit users out there, you know, Reddit is all about voting things up, voting things down. And you can also flag certain contents as being kind of, you know, in the same manner. So what you end up with when you're looking at a Reddit thread is you end up with all the comments that have been voted normally and then things that have been flagged as such by a number of people end up getting collapsed and hidden. It's almost like they fade away a little bit and they're more distant. You can see them if you like, you can unhide them, but for the most part, they're out of view. And so for the average user, you just don't really see it because it's kind of faded away. And this really reminds me of that. I would say in my use of Reddit, that's a really effective method to do it. It kind of saves Twitter from having to put its foot in the ground and start, you know, policing and removing content necessarily from the network, which I think Twitter is very hesitant to do, obviously. Otherwise, they probably would have done it at this point. But I think that's a pretty effective way for users to have a good experience and, you know, have it not totally change kind of how that security is impacted.
Mm-hmm. I think it's not just the hiding or collapsing that they're doing. They're also going to use a tool to prevent the game of whack-a-mole, which is happening, which is you get a troll kicked off because of hate or violent speech, and then they just pop right up again. So they, here I am, but in a lot not nicer way. So they're going to try to somehow stop that or slow it down, because that is really, it is crazy out there. I don't experience it myself, but you know, if you go, there's certain places that you can, like you said, if you want to uncollapse Reddit, if you want to find some of the crazy things that people are saying on Twitter, you can pretty easily find them.
Yeah.
But don't.
Yeah. They were hidden for a reason, probably. And by a lot of people, that's why they're hidden. And that's kind of the why that method, I think, works really well. Enough people do make that choice. And usually that's because they were right. And it's probably okay for it to be hidden from view. YouTube is finally rolling out its mobile live video streaming functionality to creators with more than 10,000 subscribers, with a promise that the rest of its users will have it sometime soon. Those live casts will also support something called Super Chat. This is a feature that YouTube announced last month as a way for fans to connect with and give back to creators by purchasing preferred placement in their chat window. They can spend different amounts of money and get placed for longer, up to 5 hours. YouTube creators receive all this money. So it's basically kind of like a tip jar, more or less, for YouTube live streamers.
Yeah, we talked about this when you were out of town. I talked about it with Scott Johnson. Like, you could call it a tip jar, but more with a tip jar, you're not like forced to listen to someone. Like, it seems to me like I would compare
playing
the guitar, in front of the Macy's or whatever, and someone puts money in your guitar case, and then they're allowed to just sit in front of you and say, and listen to me.
It's like they put the money in the jar and now they're your singer.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm going to sing with you for 5 hours. That's right. That's okay.
Well, they don't get to be in your YouTube video. They just get their comment.
But they get to reside at the top of the comments, which means everyone else sees it.
Yeah.
So it's almost like they're forced to be part of that conversation, even if they're not in the video.
Yeah.
Everyone's seeing what they have to say. That's a really good point.
So I'm not a fan of the super chat, but I
it's not super.
I am also not a young person. So maybe it's the thing to do. And when we talked about this, Kevin, our editor, came in and he's like, this is a real thing. He knows a lot of people who have fans that want to pay money to get their YouTubers' attention.
Okay, about getting YouTubers' attention. I'm sure people who are on YouTube probably appreciate the automatic, direct from their fans stream of cash. But that's a really good point that you bring up as far as kind of the type of content that you're forced to then, welcome into the top of the stream as a result of that. Might not, like, I wonder how you combat kind of what we're talking about
trolls.
In the last story, how you combat trolls who find it worth it to pay $10 or however much to be at the top of the stream and then throw hate at your way. I do know that they can still moderate. All of the contents can be moderated by the content creator, even the super chats. So even if that's happening, they still have the ability to remove it and everything.
But they have to do that. I mean, moderating is not easy.
Yeah, that's true. You're live streaming, you're moderating at the same time. That pulls you away from the thing you're actually live streaming.
Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely.
There's Burke. Are you saying you are the paid peanut gallery? Or they are the paid peanut?
He paid $10 to have his... he has $10... He buys those cards from us for $10 each. Motherboard says that the hacker responsible for taking down 20% of the dark web is a first-time hacker. The vigilante took down the private web hosting service Freedom Hosting 2 and knocked at least 10,000 sites offline. Motherboard says the hacker used the tag Anonymous and began taking sites down on Friday. They were still down as late as Monday of this week. The reason? They're allegedly filled with child pornography. So a vigilante. How do we feel about the vigilante hackers?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to feel bad about kind of what the impact of this is, right? It removed a lot of this stuff from the dark web. What did they say? It was somewhere around 381,000 email addresses related to this data dump. That's email addresses, hash passwords, login IDs, all this kind of stuff as a result of that. Many of those were burner email addresses that were associated with these sites. 21% were in previous breaches, as could be found through Have I Been Pwned. And so it's very likely that a lot of these people, you know, are being actively investigated as a result of this. So it's really hard from that perspective to have bad feelings about this. At the same time, I'm sure there are reasons why vigilante hacking is probably not a good idea when you stretch it out into other forms and other ways.
Right. Well, how easy, what I would like to know, would it be to put your email address in there or
that's
my
a really
email address
point.
In there?
Yeah.
Is anyone checking? I mean, they did remove the child pornography from the data dumps, but there are discussions about the child pornography and, like you said, email addresses. And so it's like, you know, the difference between say Edward Snowden going to a journalist with his whistleblowing and WikiLeaks, which is just like, here it is. You have at it and decide what's true and what's not, and you interpret it yourself.
Yeah, in some ways it kind of reminds me of the Ashley Madison thing where it's like, yeah, you were doing this thing. You thought it was secret, but actually it wasn't. Check it out. Now everybody knows, including your significant other or whatever the case may be. And it has farther reaching kind of effects, not just from a legal standpoint, but from just from your daily life. You know, it affects things because the public has access to it now. It's not just, let's say, law enforcement in this case.
Right. I mean, we can agree that child pornography is horrible, but it's always the thing that people use, like when they excuse, like, oh, but they were a child pornographer, so they don't deserve privacy. They don't deserve anything. That's always the thing that, you know, we should have back doors because there might be child pornographers out there. You know, there's
Think of the children.
So I don't know about how I feel about it, except for that I know I don't like child pornography.
Right. Well, of course. Of course, there's that. I mean, what we're realizing right now, and many have said this, I'm certainly not the first to say this, is that the era that we're entering right now is like an era around hacking that we've never seen before. For so many years prior, hacking in the general kind of mindset has been this thing that, you know, techie kids are just doing in their spare time and they're causing mischief and whatever. Hacking is now being used for major political movements. Hacking is now being used to expose, you know, in ethical statements, whatever you want to call those. So, I mean, it's a tool that has major power and influence because we're all on the internet and we all have so much data out there. So I don't know what that leads to, but that's pretty intense. There's a lot of weight behind that. And so I think that's why it's so hard to like answer the question, internet vigilantes, is that good or bad? I think it's so complex. It's really hard to understand. On one hand, it could be good. On another hand, probably not. What does that lead to?
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Vigilantes. It's a slippery slope.
There we go. Megan, you wanted Amazon's voice assistant in your car, right?
I wanted. You say that as if I don't want it anymore. I still do.
You did. And you tried it, right?
I'm working on it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, your dream is about to come true, maybe a little bit easier than what you're working on right now. Logitech's Zero Touch system has allowed users to mount their phone within the vehicle to allow for things like motion control. They've already done this in the past. I think they rolled it out last year, as well as voice control of the device to keep hands off the device while you're driving. Well, they're rolling out an update today that brings Amazon's voice assistant, she who will not be named, into the Zero Touch app, given you have an Amazon account to sync it up to, of course. But that will allow you to do everything that the Echo can do in your car.
So what
are you going to do in your car that the Echo can do?
Okay.
And why do you need to do that?
Well, I like to listen to my flash briefings.
Okay.
Which I figured out that I could do pretty easily the same thing on the Pixel. Just, you know, tell me my news.
Sure.
It is very similar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I want. I just know I want it. But is this so I could do this with my iPhone or is it just Android?
I didn't see any indication of Android or iOS. I assumed that it was either device. I guess they're showing screenshots of just Android devices.
Okay, so because, yeah, I
think it's just an app. I mean, so I would be very surprised if it didn't work with iOS, but
well,
I didn't actually see that.
Well, you know, that's if you've learned nothing, haven't you learned that there are some things that the iPhone does not like to let you do? For example, something like this. So,
but if it's just an app, I wouldn't think that it would matter. Well, I mean, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, does it? Yeah,
I thought
I'm
read somewhere that it was just Android, but
very well could be. I didn't see that in the article that I read. The Fast Company article didn't mention that.
Fast Company, they're so Android centric.
You want to keep my Android device now so you can do this, though. That's the real point here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that kind of is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you can have it.
Oh. The Wall Street Journal reports on a new handheld device that will tell you if you smell bad. Minolta, the copier maker, wants to help those of us who are anxious about our body odor. A gadget called Kun Kun, that's sniff sniff in Japanese, is small enough to fit in your pocket. It connects with a smartphone app, which will tell you whether or not you stink. The device will be on sale in Japan this summer for just a few $100s. So if you're watching the video now, you'll see if it tells you if you stink under your arms or
your feet.
All the places.
All the places you could stink. Every single one of them.
I don't know. I wish it were just like an attachment to the phone as opposed to a whole other device, because I don't need a whole other device. I can just ask you.
It's a dedicated device to tell you whether you smell. If you think that you need a dedicated device to tell you whether you smell, you smell.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
Right. He was pointing it at his head. Like, whose head smells?
I'm sure somebody's does.
Okay,
happy I didn't know that that existed before, but apparently it does.
I didn't see this anywhere but the Wall Street Journal. So I don't know if they're being punked or if it's fake news or some kind of Japanese propaganda or something. I'm just saying.
I believe it exists.
Well, did you know, TIL, thing I learned, Sumihara. Sumihara is the Japanese term for smell harassment, which means just smelling bad and like taking that.
You're harassing me by being so odorific.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't. Well, I mean, it makes sense, kind of. Sometimes I feel that way when I'm sitting out at my desk because we smell the kitchen. Because the kitchen's right on the other side. I feel like I'm being smell harassed.
Yeah, you have Sumihara from the kitchen. It's true.
Yeah, it's true.
Let that be
depending
a lesson
depending on
to
what
you,
people are cooking. It's very, very true. It's a real thing.
Sumihara.
What if I see your device that tells you if you smell and I raise you a VR cabinet that simulates the smell of your virtual environment? This is the VR Sense. It's as large as a dresser, as you can see, maybe even larger. It can simulate not only an array of scents that are tied to the virtual experience that you are in there experiencing, but also things like wind, mist, temperature. In some cases, they were able to simulate bugs or rats crawling on you. Does this sound like a fun use of your time when you're in VR?
No.
Because I know that you love VR. You've got the daydream.
I do. I'm trying to think if there's anything here. Like, I went to space.
Yeah.
You could
feel
some
a star
protest marching
by you.
Yeah. The feeling, yes. Smelling, no.
No. I don't think anyone wants virtual smell of anything. That's only going to go bad.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'm happy we had this discussion.
Yeah. Sumihara.
Coming up, it's the end of the Twit Switch as we know it, and we'll share our thoughts on the experiment. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. You want that house. I know you do. But you know what? You've got to jump some hurdles. You've got to jump some really tall hurdles, and it's not going to be easy to find all that information to be able to get that mortgage. Sometimes it's a challenge pulling it from all over the place. So you need someone that kind of has your back in the process. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone that you can trust who has your best interest in mind. And with Rocket Mortgage, you're going to get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. So you're not going to waste time searching through paperwork trying to find that information all over the place. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. You can even adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time. So you can kind of play around with the numbers and see where you get to the just right point just to make sure that that mortgage solution is right for you. Whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan by using Rocket Mortgage. So skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online. Check out quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. So we've undergone a whole month. 1 month ago, kind of today. I can't remember the actual day of last month, but it was a Tuesday.
Yeah, we really were different people. We were so innocent back then, a month ago.
Man, things were so different a month ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, and,
Yeah, you spent a month with the Pixel.
I have spent a month with the Pixel, and I do feel like I've learned a lot. So today we're going to talk about some things that we liked and some things that we didn't like.
Yeah.
So I would say, I mean, we've talked about this before, but I would say really never underestimate the ability to customize the apps on your home screen, because I would put up a lot on Android. Just to be able to move my apps around.
So you found yourself kind of spending time actually kind of organizing your home screen. I didn't do very much of that on iOS because, you know, it's just that kind of same like horizontal screen. And I just felt like my efforts, I don't know how it's different. I'm trying to figure out how it's different because you're still moving icons around and putting them in folders. But for some reason, I feel like it's easier or better on Android.
Well, first of all, I'm not so big into the folders. Just I like to have things where my fingers are, right? So this also, I mean, I had just really discarded with being a one-handed phone user with the iPhone. It's hard, right?
Yeah, because
the back button's all the way up there. But I like to have, like, the apps that I use most often, I like to be able to use them with a certain finger. So on iOS, if you want something in the top left corner and something in the top right corner, you have to fill in the spots with other stuff.
Because it all kind of shifts over. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
That kind of makes it more difficult.
And that's really frustrating. But with Android, I really have enjoyed just putting things exactly where I want them, exactly where my finger is going to find them when I need them. And I did like that. And it was easier to put things in folders and you can see them. I noticed if you put things in folders on iOS, you get
these tiny little folders with these like a few pixels each icon. Well, it's impossible to see in this camera. But, I mean, a folder is like this one icon with these tiny little dots inside that vaguely show you what's in there.
And then I have a folder with Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, and Messenger. And I can see them all. I know they're all there and they're just far enough away. Mm-hmm. So I did really like that. Now, I also liked Google Assistant. She was just overall better. And I say better in the sense that I could say things my way. And she wouldn't understand me every time, but she would certainly understand me a lot more than Siri does. And I did like that. I could ask all kinds of things. And she would just get it. I mean, the weirdest things, like, is my dog allergic to almonds? That was one that I tried, with Siri and with the Google Assistant. And she not only gave me the answer, but she told me the answer. Mm-hmm. You know, she says she read.
It wasn't just here's a web result that might tell you what you're looking for.
And if I have to tell you how many times I've had to ask Siri if my dog was allergic to almonds while I was driving.
Oh, I mean it's me too, and I don't even have a dog, so. Yeah.
But you know what I'm talking about, I want Siri to read it back to me. Most of the time when I'm using Siri, I'm in the car alone. Like, I don't really like talking to my devices in public, and so usually I'm driving and I need her to read back to me, and I felt like the Google Assistant really did that. And I felt like she was learning. I felt like we just really became friends and now we're breaking up. It's a little bit sad.
I'm trying to think of other ways that you can still maintain this relationship with Assistant. I guess you could get Google Home, but
I could. Well, that was the other thing.
You have the Echo.
I mean, it would be great to have Google Home, because that, not only that, but everything would be, you know, my flash briefing or whatever, you know, because on Google Assistant, like on the Amazon Echo, you can choose what news you put in your flash briefing. You can choose that in your assistant. And it would be great to just choose it once, have it on my phone, also have it on my home assistant.
So if you're in the car, you can get access to it anyways. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have to get that Logitech thing we talked about earlier.
Right. Yeah. That was why I need the Echo in the car. I did the Android Wear. Some things grew on me. The weirdest things. Like, there's a flashlight on Android Wear. There's one on the Asus Zen 2 that I borrowed from Flo, and there's one on your Moto 360.
When you say flashlight, what do you mean?
I mean, you...
Like it whites the screen to make it really bright?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you, like, if you're in the dark, if you're trying to find your key, the Apple Watch doesn't have that.
It's like magic.
I don't understand why, and I've needed it so many times, and I've tried to MacGyver it, like by opening the Maps app on the Apple Watch, and it doesn't stay on.
What's the brightest app I have on here that I can launch right now? Yeah, exactly.
And, I mean, it's a battery issue, I guess, but it works. Mm-hmm. It works just fine. And the Qi charging, I really enjoyed that. This doesn't have it. This Zen Watch doesn't have the Qi charging, but Apple Watch doesn't have it. No iPhones have it. So it's just, that's a nice thing to just be able to set your phone down and charge it.
What is the charging on the Apple Watch? Because it's it just it sits on a thing. It's kind of like chi charging, isn't it?
Right. But I guess, but it's not chi charging. Like, you have to have that proprietary.
Oh, I see cable. What you mean. So it's because that did come in handy for you,
yes,
where we didn't have the Moto 360 charger here and you needed to get a charge and someone here had one for their Samsung phone.
Right.
And
yes,
of course that worked because it was just a standard.
Yeah. So it is nice to be able to set your watch down and have it charge. And it would be nice to be able to set your iPhone down and just have it charge. It would be wonderful if the Apple Watch charger worked with an iPhone. That would be great. I'm sure there's a very logical reason why that doesn't work, but probably not enough power, but it doesn't.
Okay.
And I think one of my favorite things was the Daydream VR. And I'm not huge...
Didn't see that one coming.
I know. I'm not huge into VR, but this is stuff that you just can't do on the iPhone. You just, it's not, I'm not a big gamer, but I enjoyed it. There was a game that I downloaded called Labster. It's not really a game, but you get to like pretend like you're in a lab and you walk around inside and you have to clean up messes.
Well, I have to check out this game or experience or whatever it is.
Right, because that's what I like. I like VR where I have to clean up after people. But you could feel that you were really learning. I mean, from an education perspective, I think that would be amazing. It was a fun game and you're really in there. There's Star Chart VR that I'm going to talk more about on All About Android, so you'll have to watch that. And the Wall Street Journal app was surprisingly great for VR. It's not just one of those apps where you're sitting in a living room. There were musical performances. I got to watch the fastest woman ever on her bike and feel like I was the fastest woman on her bike. And then, I've talked a little bit about the photos, the 360 photos, the photospheres, which are difficult to make. But once I looked at them in Daydream, it was amazing. We were in the African American History Museum in D.C., which was great. And I took a photosphere there and then I felt like I was back there. I really liked the Daydream, and I'm going to be sad to give it up because it doesn't work on, it only works on the Pixel. You can't stick an iPhone in here. It won't. You
can't stick an iPhone, although there are more Daydream. In fact, today the ZTE Axon 7 is one of the few Daydream compatible phones. It's getting its update today. I'm downloading it right now. That'll make it compatible with that viewer. Not going to work with the iPhone, but more Android devices are being opened up. It's not just isolated to Pixel devices right now.
Did you miss this the most?
To be completely honest, there are many things I like more about the Gear VR than I like about the Daydream View. But the controller on the Daydream View, that's where it's at as far as that's concerned. That's a really nice extra thing that you don't have on Gear VR.
Right, I know. And I love that it fits right into the...
Yeah.
I'd still managed to lose it, but I found it again.
Excellent.
And of course, finally, the back button. I really liked having a back button, and I will miss that.
Because there is a back kind of button usually that you can find in iOS interface, but sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not, and it's definitely almost always up in the top left-hand corner, which, as you were talking about earlier, if you're working in kind of one-handed mode, isn't so easy. There is, and a user or a fan pointed this out, but if you double tap the home button, you get the, I don't know if you saw that, but if I double tap the home button, everything shrinks down, and I can reach it with my thumb. So that's a way around it.
You know what? I double tap accidentally. I never knew what that was for. That was so you can reach the top.
Yeah.
I learned something.
I taught Megan something today about iOS.
Yes. All right. What did you like? Teach me some more things.
Okay. Well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to teach you a whole lot, but I'm probably going to tell you a lot of things that you probably already know. I would say one of the top things on my list is just a general sense of cohesion, of fluidity with the interface, animations, visual splashes, all without slowdown. Like and this is something that I've always really appreciated about iOS is that we know that Apple has a really tuned mind or tuned ethos to making, and some people might roll their eyes, but making experiences that are enjoyable, let's say, making hardware that is really nice to have in your hand and interact with, making software that looks nice and has kind of a pretty aspect to it. And some people that might not matter to. I think in a general sense, as long as it doesn't slow things down, as long as it doesn't get in the way, it makes the experience, I don't know, just a little bit more enjoyable. And playing around with iOS for a month, I really recognize the ways that Apple has done that with iOS, that Google has done a lot more of that in more recent versions of Android, and I really applaud Google for kind of thinking about that and kind of getting out of its, like, you know, seasoned techie approach for the OS and think about those sorts of things. But Apple really does a great job in their OS as far as that's concerned. Things really move around with a nice gentle quality, and the experience just seems pleasant, let's say. So I appreciate that. 3D touch was something, and I know I've mentioned it a few times, but it was just a feature that it was one of those things that I did not expect to make any sort of impact whatsoever. I figured it was just going to be a throwaway function that, okay, well, that's one of those, you know, stupid, like, features that made the stage at their last announcement and then everybody forgets about. But anytime I went to use 3D touch to, like, test around with it and play around with it, most of the time, it showed me what I was hopefully going to find. I think the example on yesterday's iOS Today is, like, when you pull down the notification shade, or the whatever you call it on iOS, and there's a notification there. If it's like a messaging notification, I can 3D touch that messaging notification, and it gives me the reply option right there, so that I don't have to go into the messaging app and then type into the box. I just do it directly from there. And that was, like, something that I guessed, and it worked, and I used that throughout the course of the entire month. So I don't know. I found 3D touch to be more than just a gimmicky option. I found it actually to be really useful.
Well, you know, it's interesting on Android, the way, you know, it automatically assumes that you're going to want to reply. Like, you don't have to do anything if you touch it.
It's embedded in there automatically.
Mm-hmm. So that is kind of one of the big differences. It's like it wants to assume what you want to do, mm-hmm. even though it could be a little confusing. And I think that's where iOS really, they really don't want to confuse people.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I would completely agree. Ecosystem interplay is another thing that I've come to really appreciate, and this makes a whole lot of sense, right? Like, Apple has really designed all their hardware to be aware of all the other hardware that they create, right? So the iPhone and the Watch, you know, communicate and interoperate really well. The Watch and the MacBook Pro, you know, when I open up my MacBook Pro, it recognizes the watch that's on my wrist and close to me and automatically unlocks my computer. When the watch was upstairs, you know, locked or charging or whatever, it wouldn't recognize that, and I would have to enter my password. We played around with AirDrop a little bit, and that was really cool. I had no plans or even any, like, inkling to play around with AirDrop, but you sent a picture a couple of weeks ago to Jerry's AirDrop, and I was like, wait a minute, how did you just do that? And so you showed that to me. I was like, that's really cool. There's just a nice kind of interplay between all the hardware, and that's a big strength, I think, that Apple has in the way that they create their hardware. I really liked portrait mode in the camera, because that I would say about 2/3 of the photos that I took were in portrait mode, because the more I used it, the more I got those really nice kind of, like, blurred background, sharp foreground. Got some really great pictures of my kids with portrait mode, and I'm going to miss that. And then I think just in general, I really appreciate iOS's and Apple's approach to updates, and just the fact that everybody gets updates more or less right around the same time. I really wish we had that on Android, and it's something that I long for.
Mm.
I hope that at some point Google can figure that out, but I think it's just they're very different platforms, and that's just not going to happen on the Android side of things.
Yeah, I mean, that is really one of the main, you know, it's the closed down ecosystem.
Yep.
You can control everything, and yeah. So, well, we got some feedback. Renard Mayfield writes about the Switch, responding to the way we use the notification panes as our to-do list. We both had our had the way that we do things, and it was slightly different on Android, and that was frustrating. Mm-hmm. And he wrote, I'm a former BlackBerry user. I loved the Hub before it was even called the Hub. It was just the message center, and all of your tweets, Facebook messages, emails, text messages, and the like, it's almost like a checklist of messages to respond to. You could obviously go to your actual app for each one. I have wished that BlackBerry would create the Hub for other platforms.
Well, BlackBerry does have the Hub on Android now.
Oh.
They have their, so do a search for BlackBerry Hub. You'll find BlackBerry's app, because that's where BlackBerry is now. BlackBerry is an Android kind of software suite on top of, it's BlackBerry's software suite on top of Android devices, and that's really what BlackBerry has kind of committed itself to now. And now they have the BlackBerry Hub that you can install on your Android device, and you can also install some of BlackBerry's other software solutions, and it works into the Hub much in the same way that we're talking about here in this email.
Is there a Hub for iOS?
I don't know if there is a hub for iOS. I'm guessing not, because BlackBerry has really kind of gone all in on Android at this point.
Yeah.
But there you go. There's a solution for getting a BlackBerry hub. Once again.
Yeah, Renard wished for it and it happened.
Boom.
Apparently. After the break, we will tell you what we did not like about using each other's phones. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals for less than $10 per person. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the United States. Seafood is sourced sustainably under standards developed in partnership with the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. Beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals. Produce is sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming. Because Blue Apron ships the exact amount of each ingredient required for a recipe, they are reducing food waste. And their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. I've been getting Blue Apron for a while. I've never seen any of the produce come that wasn't already right. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment, so you get deliveries when you want them. It's great to go on their website and kind of see what's coming so you can plan, especially if you're watching what you eat. It's nice to know, okay, I'm going to get fish this day, and I'm going to get a steak the next day. And it's nice to know those things. Customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences and choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. Here's some of what you might see: cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice, roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro salad, crispy barramundi with quinoa and roasted carrot salad. I had never had barramundi before I started getting Blue Apron, and it is a good fish. I do enjoy it. Udon noodle soup with miso and soft boiled eggs. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home cooked meals with Blue Apron. Don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/TNT. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right. Uh-oh.
This is the moment I'm worried about. I'm worried to hear what you did not like.
What I didn't like. If you don't like to hear people complaining, just mute me for a couple minutes.
This is balanced reporting here. Brian went ahead and muted
Brian
you. Ryan doesn't want to hear what you have to say. He wields too much control.
Android Wear. Now Brian has an Android Wear. It's very fancy. It looks great on him, but the operating system is not, it's no Watch OS. Actually, I know you have an Android Watch. Is it Android Wear or is it some other kind of OS?
Oh, my watch?
Yeah.
It's a Moto 360, the first
gen.
Yes, and sir. I really don't wear it that much because it's kind of
faded.
Flashy?
It's faded, yeah. Yeah. Like, the faded. Battery doesn't last and it doesn't work well.
Oh, I thought you had a new fancy one.
No, just regular watches now. Actually, yeah. Wearables, like these new watches, got me into wearing actual old watches.
Got it. All right. Then I'm not criticizing you. And you don't love Android Wear either, so I'm not insulting anyone. It's just the Apple Watch was just the style that I like. I like the way the operating system works. I like trying, and this is new with watchOS 2, but now I can respond to messages not just with the canned responses, but I can scribble and write words. Did you try that?
No, I didn't.
Because it's iMessage.
There's a little bit of that for sure. That is a reason why I didn't play around with it. I know that, I can't remember if with the current version of Wear you can do that, but I know that the update, which is literally supposed to be out any day, probably this week, the big update to Android Wear 2.0 might have that as part of it.
Because right now it's just yes, no, okay, or you can draw an emoji, and I didn't like that. So messaging was my most frustrating aspect of the past month. iMessage works, and I don't blame Android for this. I blame iPhones. I blame Apple because they want people to stay on iPhones, and they make iMessage a closed system. And so I even deactivated my phone number before I switched, and I still lost. All my group messages, I wasn't getting messages. It was, people would send me a message and then they wouldn't see, but it would say it didn't go through, but they would never look. So it's that was frustrating to me. I know a lot of people love WhatsApp and a lot of people love Signal and a lot of people love Facebook Messenger. I love iMessage, and that's where my people are. That's where most of my people are. And I will be excited to get back to my people. Battery life. I know you liked the quick charge. You like the quick chargeness of the Pixel. But that's not my habit. My habit is to go all day and charge all night. And I never worried with the iPhone 7 that I'm going to run out in the day. Yeah. Sure, like in a year, will I worry? I probably will. Because the battery life will not always be as amazing as I want. But that's a pretty new phone, and I love the battery life. So what was frustrating, just in general, the change and the chaos of it. I want my phone to be, it's just a dependable piece of hardware. It just works. And having to figure out how everything works on this. Yes, I know I can customize everything. I know I can go into the file system. It's just a settings away. I can go in there. I can tap other. I can look at all the files on my Android phone. And wouldn't that be amazing? I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't. And I got tired of people saying, because I got frustrated with the voicemail. Like the whole interface of the voicemail looks really weird. Like every time I want to press speaker, I'm pressing a button. It doesn't work. People would say, well, you can download this visual voicemail app, or you can download... I don't want to download another app. I just want to have that one that works.
That is, what you're saying right there is definitely a criticism that I've had about Android too. Is yes, there are a million different ways that you can solve some of these problems by installing this app or that app. But I mean, the grand point, I think, for a lot of just everyday users, people who aren't used to thinking about their technology in those kinds of ways of, well, how can I solve this problem by this complex recipe of apps in order to do it? They just want a thing that works. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that iOS is really good about, the iPhone. It's limited. It's restricted in certain ways, which I'll get into in a second. But that is great for people that don't want a complex experience all the time, that don't want to have to think about all of that customization. That's just not important to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I think finally what I decided was, I mean, I used to use Android and I would get really frustrated when people are like, what is that? I can never use an Android phone. Like I have to use an iPhone. Isn't it just better? And especially this was 4 years ago and it wasn't better. Like that was a time when the Android phones that I have were better than iPhones, four or 5 years ago. People just were, there was that idea of I just want an iPhone. It costs more. It must be better. And that's not true. And I still don't think that. And I think that for cost conscious, I mean, I know the Pixel is only, is on the higher end of price. But
for sure,
if you're watching your budget, if you need to spend your money or you want to spend your money on other things, an Android phone is fine, less expensive. I know, I'm not trying to convince you this because you know this and you always talk about all these phones that are really good for what you need. And that makes sense. I've made the choice for iPhone. It's something that I would spend more money on because I can make that choice. And so that's what I've learned. It's not better. It's just I've made the choice and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah. It's not better. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
As far as some of the things that I kind of ran into with iOS on a somewhat regular basis, just a general sense that things take me a little bit longer on iOS than they do on Android. On Android, kind of that notification thing is kind of a prime example, right? A notification on iOS, you have to swipe it over and then tap to clear it. Sure, that's only two things to get rid of it. But on Android, I love that I can just go and get rid of seven notifications. For me, that's actually really important because I use my notification tray. What I realized, especially in this whole transition, is that I use my notifications tray almost as a to-do list for things that I have or have not taken care of yet. That email that came through, or that schedule, that item on my schedule that's for tonight. I leave it in my notification tray as a constant reminder. Then when I get there, I swipe it away. And so managing some of those things, that's just one example. There are other elements throughout the OS where it was like, why did this take three taps when it should just only take one? I want to do this thing. And over here, it's like I have to jump through fiery hoops to do it. On Android, sometimes I feel like I can just do it with a simple tap. And that's just, and really that at the end of the day, that's just a matter of the fact that different OSs do things differently. And you really get used to one way or the other. And I'm so used to, in certain ways, that kind of easier approach, in my opinion, on Android. Second would have to be Siri. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday on iOS Today. I really tried to use Siri in the same way that I realize I use Google Assistant and voice search and all that stuff on Android. And time and time again, my comments to Siri would not be interpreted in ways that I would hope that they would be, and in ways that Assistant was good at interpreting. With Google Assistant, you can give a voice command and there's a certain syntax that it's looking for, but Google is smart enough on the back end to take what you said and convert that into the proper syntax and then give you the answer for that. And I felt like with Siri, if I wasn't asking exactly the right question or phrasing it properly, or if I just didn't know that that's not the kind of thing that Siri gives you the answer for, then I would end up with a web search. And it was like, okay, well, I could have just opened up a browser and done a web search. That's whatever. But I continued to use it. And I mean, it did work in some ways. And that was nice, you know, pulling up phone numbers. I need to call so-and-so. So I do a search for it. But more often than not, it was road bumps along the way, I would say. Overall, just widgets. I feel like the widgets on iOS, personally, kind of laughable compared to and I mean, part of that is probably just because Android has had widgets for so long. Widgets is core, almost, you know, it's almost as far back as Android has existed. Not entirely, but it's been around for a really long time, and it's more embedded into the main home screen that you're constantly interacting with. On iOS, it's like, we've got widgets, we put them over there, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's this little bar over on the side, and you can get to them. And I just felt like, okay, yeah, it's just kind of messy, I guess. Mm-hmm. And but in general, I think and I mentioned this again yesterday on iOS Today, just a general lack of control over everything, which I'm very used to having on Android. I'm very used to being able to control a lot of things that go deep into the OS. And it's just part of how I use my phone. And kind of that deeper level of settings is kind of lacking on iOS. I'm sure you could probably open that up if you jailbroke. I'm sure there are ways to kind of get access to some of that stuff if you did that. But I just kind of found the OS experience to be kind of, I don't know, a little boring as a result. I used the phone as a phone. Go figure. You know what I mean? But that was it. Whereas on Android, I have a tighter experience with it. I'm using it as a phone. I'm using it as a web browser. But I'm also kind of like eager to interact with it a little bit more than I was with the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. It's your friend as opposed to your jail cell guard.
Sure. Sure. That's one way to put it. Overall, I'm really happy that we did the switch, because at least for me, selfishly, I wanted to understand what iOS is like. Mm-hmm. And I've felt like the only way that you do that is you live with it for a while, mm-hmm. and you see what it's all about.
I agree. Yeah. If you want more of a detailed description, recounting of our experiences on each platform, check out yesterday's episode of iOS Today at twit.tv/iOS. And stick around after this show if you're watching live. Tonight's episode of All About Android, you can find that at twit.tv/AAA. Each of us is the guest on the other show to discuss our perspectives during the month-long switch. And after tonight, our phone lives officially return to normal.
I will have to hand this back to you at the end of tonight's episode. Feel like we kind of need to do that now, but I guess it would just be symbolic because we'd end up with our phones again.
Right, exactly. But yeah, I'm glad also you didn't drop it or crack it.
Well, I left the case on the entire time. I don't know if you noticed that. Like, yeah. I wouldn't dare take the case off. I know better. I know myself well enough to know that.
Yeah, I took the case off.
I know. You've lived dangerously. I can tell. TNT's fan of the day is Natalia, who writes, I like to listen when I'm walking. I'm trying to do more exercises in 2017. So today I walked to the farmer's market listening to Tech News Today and also laughing. I hope I hope not too hysterically, and people weren't like looking at you while you were laughing. But at the same time, you know what? I hope so, because we are hilarious. If I do say so myself.
I hope she was laughing with us and not.
Yes, that's a really good point. Natalia is actually in Costa Rica, if I remember correctly from her email. Costa Rica's awesome. I hope to return someday. I'm very jealous that you're there. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it. Coming up, CSI has been preparing us for this technology for years. But before we talk about that, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. We're all used to losing things. Newsweek actually reports the average American wastes 55 minutes a day looking for things that they own. But wouldn't you know it, they can't find it. Well, Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. And I'm going to tell you how to get one for free. The Tracker Bravo locates misplaced keys, wallets, luggage, instruments, bicycles, electronic devices, even pets in seconds. Pretty much use your imagination, you can track it. The coin-sized device is constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can attach it very easily to your items with the included key loop. Tracker is enabled by Bluetooth LE, so the battery is going to last up to a full year. Can add a laser engraved message to each Tracker Bravo, things like return information or pet information. You can also personalize your tracker with a custom printed image. So you can, you know, use your imagination, put that image on your tracker, and now it's totally yours. Pair Tracker to your iOS or Android device and find its precise location with the tap of a button. And that's really all there is to it. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. If you happen to lose your phone, you press the button on the tracker, and your phone will ring even if it was left on silent. With over 3.5 million devices shipped, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item is going to show up on a map even if it's miles away. If you lose your item, the Tracker app records its last known location on a map. Then when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you're going to get a GPS update of where your item is located so you can go and hopefully get it. Go to thetracker.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter promo code TNT, you're going to get a free Tracker Bravo with your order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT to get your free Tracker Bravo today. And we thank Tracker for their support. All right, Zoom Enhance. It's the stuff of primetime crime drama legend. You've heard that on shows, right? Like, yes. Zoom in, enhance, and it's like this super pixelated image. Yeah, zoom in. Yeah, zoom in.
Don't ever do
There's
that
no
to me,
way you. Yeah. There's no way you can enhance that. Now it's one step closer to being a reality. And, of course, it's the result of neural networks. In this case, Google Brain, which is the AI that I think we spoke about last year, how it wrote dark romantic poetry. It also wrote really bad electronic music. It can now take a heavily pixelated image, apply two neural networks in tandem to the images to bring them into more focus. Kind of. This is really kind of a trick more than it is actually taking an image and bringing it into focus. Conditioning is one of the neural networks, and it basically matches the 8x8 pixelated photo, which is the source, to other photos inside of Google's database that match it. So it kind of pixelates those photos and then matches it closely, right? And then the prior network neural network guesses where to add pixels to the one that you gave it so that the pixelated image, based on all of that analysis, comes more into focus. And so, in essence, it's not necessarily bringing back pixels, as you can see, between the source and the destination. Like, they're not the same images on both sides, but it's able to do a really good kind of interpretation of what that image may have looked like.
It's monstrous. It's really weird. If you look at, I looked around at some of the other sites, and it's scary. And yeah. I don't want that. A pixelated image should remain pixelated. There was a reason it was pixelated.
That's probably true. That's very true. It's very true. I don't know what you're saying, Bert. Oh. There was an iPhone scratch screen scare first day. What are you talking about?
Did you scratch my iPhone?
What? What are you talking about? No, I didn't scratch.
Burke, you weren't supposed to talk about that.
I didn't. Oh.
Megan will never
notice. That has nothing to
do
with the pixelated images.
Okay, that has nothing to do with pixelated images.
Completely unrelated.
But remember, he has his comment. He paid to have his comment. We have to bring it up.
That's true.
He paid to
it's
keep
always
it there
at the top of the
he
show.
He paid us $500 or if he makes a comment. We have to, if it's not what we're talking about. Okay, right. we can get to the scratching later, but on this 9 to 5 Google, it doesn't look as monstrous this on this article, but some of them kind of do. But yeah, if you look around for Google Brain and search, it is creepy.
Yeah, it's a little weird. It does make you wonder if at some point in the future this feature will actually exist in the CSI sort of way.
Yeah.
Probably. Who are we kidding? It's probably going to happen.
There will be no more secrets in life.
We're kind of already almost there. Mm-hmm. That is it for this week's episode, or this day's episode. We've still got the rest of the week.
You're like, I'm done. That was exhausting.
This is a long show. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW, and find us on Twitter, at Tech News Today TV.
And we want you to come see us. So you can get tickets at Twit. Go to tickets@twit.tv and email us. And you can come sit in a chair here. And maybe Burke will let you write a card. And you can also subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And I am on Twitter. So you can find me and either encourage or criticize all the things I said about the iPhone or the Android phone. Find me at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian Burnett. Thanks to Burke, kind of, I think, for helping out of the studio. Somewhat for distractions, but that's okay. It's okay. We forgive you. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.